Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bullandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Issues 2025. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is retired Sedgwick County Judge David Dahl. Welcome to Issues 2025, David.
Thanks, Steve. Is it already?
Can I call you Dave?
Yes.
I don't have to call you Your Honor anymore.
You know, I've told people, my wife said to me just after I was elected, if you think I'm going to refer to you as Your Honor, you've got another thing coming. And when I see people out, I always corrected them and said, please call me Dave. Please refer me to Dave. In the courthouse, it's different.
Yeah, that's true. You put on the robe then. I always ask my wife to address me as Your Excellency.
Which I'm sure she does. I know her well.
Well, let's see. You've been a judge since 2013. Is that correct?
Yes. I did in 2012. Uh-huh. I took the bench in 2013.
So why are you leaving the bench?
We age out, which is sad, kind of heartbreaking, and you can't run for re-election if you take the bench after you've turned 75. And I would have had I run and won, so I couldn't run again. And several of us tried to get that age raised, but the legislature just wasn't having any of it.
So, do you think mandatory retirement is it a good idea?
I don't think so, but I don't think so because it's impacted me. You know, there are the federal judges can serve forever. Legislators can serve forever. But I certainly don't want my doctor being my doctor at the age of 75 or a pilot being a pilot at the age of 75. So I do understand some of that.
Well, as you looked around you down there at the courthouse, you want to name any names of people who should be retired early?
No. But many, many, many years ago, there were some that fell into the crosshairs of the legislators across the state, and they reduced the age to 70 to get rid of some of those people. And then once they did, shortly thereafter, they raised it back up to 75 again.
Mm. We're going to talk about several things this morning, but some of it about sports, if you don't mind.
I'd love to.
You've provided color commentary for Wichita State University for quite some time now. How long have you and Mike Kennedy done the games on radio?
I think this is our 45th year. We are the longest tenured color play-by-play combination in the country, and I think have been for several years. I had to take a year off when I campaigned. They had a rule, and you're familiar with this, equal time. So my opponent, for the 6 hours, 5 hours that I would be on the air, would be able to get on the air at comp time and talk as well. And So I voluntarily took the year off. So Mike's been actually on the air a year longer than I have.
Now tell us about tell us the story. How did you get into radio?
I gave a lot of speeches when I was working at the Chamber of Commerce, and Mike was going to take over the play-by-play on the radio. He had done a lot of different things in sports and had a very good reputation and had worked in smaller communities but was living in Wichita, and they offered him the play-by-play position for the Shockers. And, of course, he jumped at it.
What year was that?
It was, I think, 77.
Sounds right.
Maybe 80. Maybe okay. It was 80. That would be about right, about okay. 79 or 80. Anyway, Mike was looking for a color analyst, and he asked two guys, and they said, well, geez, I can't do that, but you might want to talk to Dave Dahl. So both of them had said that, so Mike invited me out, and we did an exhibition game together, and of course anybody could do a good job with Mike because he's tremendous. He's the best in the business. But it worked well, and Mike invited me to hook on, and then I've been there other than that years off ever since then.
There is no textbook or really any kind of guidance for somebody to be a color basketball color analyst.
No, there really isn't.
There's a thing that's going on there that's a timing and a communication that you just have to get in and do it. Yeah,
and that's the important thing. I look at the event itself as being the focal point, and then Mike is second, and then I am a distant third. And it takes me 10 hours to prepare for a game, and I color code things. And when Mike is taking a breath or I sense that it's a time to jump in and say something, I get in and I get out right away so that Mike can get back to calling the action. And I don't have any problem with that, and that has seemed to work.
It's different on radio than it is on TV. I listen to these guys, watch these guys on TV, and they don't really give you much about the game.
You know, I have compared it to going to an art museum and describing a painting to somebody that can see. And if you're talking about the subtleties to somebody that can see. But radio is more like describing the painting to a blind person.
Yeah.
And you have to bring it to life and do the best job that you can. And I think radio it's different. I think it's a little bit harder, but it certainly is different. And that's why you have to have people like Mike that really know what they're doing.
I'm seeing a lot of the young people that I run into anymore. There are not many of them who seem to be enamored of radio like we were because everything's so literal. Everything is right in front of them, and you know, anyway.
And it is.
It's kind of an opinion.
And they're raised differently, and their lives are different. But to this day, I much prefer radio. And I'll be sitting in my home office, and I'll be working on something, and I'll have a game on the radio, not on TV. And I just much prefer it that way.
When you were a kid, you grew up in Kansas City?
I grew up in Shakopee, Minnesota.
In Minnesota.
Which is, okay. A suburb of Minneapolis. It's about 25 miles outside of Minneapolis.
But you got in Kansas City when you were in high school then?
Moved to Kansas City. My mom and dad and the five kids, of which I'm the oldest, moved to Kansas City the day before school started my sophomore year in high school.
Who did you listen to on the radio?
I can't remember in Kansas City who I listened to. Then when I moved down here to Wichita to go to college, of course, Gus Greeby was the one I would listen to.
Sure.
But I listened to games rather than people.
Yeah.
So I can't remember who the people were.
Now, I want to backtrack just a little bit. You mentioned something there that is interesting to me because I've found this to be true on several of the people I know who are in this business, and they talk about preparation. Preparation you do and I worked with Mike Kennedy.
Yeah.
So I know what kind of preparation he does.
Certainly does.
And Mitch Holter's from the Chiefs, he'll tell you how much he does and you how much you do. Talk about that a little bit. There are people in all businesses who say they can walk in the door and just do it.
Well, and
– or they think they can.
Quick story, but I'll tell you how much time prep. And I know you prep 6 hours for a show, and that's pretty remarkable. And you can tell when you listen to your broadcasts. But – it takes me about 10 hours to prepare for a basketball game, and you use about 10% of that 10 hours worth. And it used to be back in the old day, you'd have to visit the sports information director's office and get material. You're on the road. You have to go to the university and get the material from them. You have to analyze it. So you didn't get much sleep the night before the game because you were analyzing. I still spend 10 hours, but the problem I have is I have to cut it off at 10 hours because there's just so much more information that is available out there. But I talked with Gus Greeby, and he came back to be interviewed by Mike and I before one of the ball games, and he was in his 90s and still sharp. And Gus was the play-by-play guy for the Shockers. And I said, Gus, how did you prepare for a game? And he said, oh, I'd get there about half an hour before the game started. And I'd take out an 8.5 by 11 lined yellow sheet of paper, and I'd draw a line down the middle, and I'd put Wichita State on the left-hand side, and whoever we were playing on the right-hand side, I'd find out who the five starters were, and I'd list their number and their name, and that was the extent of my preparation. Probably about 8 minutes. And he was good.
Yeah.
That was his personality. He was
great
good.
Great job.
Yeah.
All right. So when do you, again, you had a scholarship, you worked into a scholarship at Wichita State to play basketball. When do you ever get that feeling that maybe you're getting too technical for the average person out there?
I try not to, but I use a lot of statistics, and sometimes I grade myself after every game, and sometimes I think, probably could have said this a little bit differently, probably could have emphasized this a little bit, but it's so instantaneous getting in and getting out that you just have to do the very best job. And Mike does a great job of describing what's going on. For me to get in and re-describe what's going on, there's no reason to do that because it's been done already, and he does it much better than anybody else could.
Well, just personally, I'm terribly offended when you shout into the microphone, oh, my goodness. That's cussing for you.
Yeah, at least I keep it at oh, my goodness.
Is it as much fun as it should be or would be?
It's still a delight to do the games. You love the games. You love sports. And I hear it come out when you're talking about sports, both when you're on the air and when we talk privately. But it comes out, and you have an emotion and a passion, and my friends and I still talk, and we still reminisce about some of the really, really enjoyable things, and that passion is very evident.
You've had a good career as an attorney. What attracted you to the law?
I was working at the Chamber of Commerce, and I was their chief fundraiser. And we were looking at the possibility of opening a law school at Wichita State. So we assembled a committee, and there were 25 people on the committee. Almost all of them were attorneys. And we spent months and months looking over the feasibility of this. And we'd go up to KU, and we'd talk to the people. We'd go to Washburn and talk to the people. We came back. We analyzed it. And a number of the attorneys on the committee, and we decided not to have a law school in Wichita, not to even attempt it, which was wise. But a number of attorneys on the committee said, you know what, at your age, you're 25 years old, you might want to think about becoming an attorney. It's a profession that gives one great pleasure, and you seem to have the mindset for it. So Tony and I talked about it, and we said, sure, we're up for the challenge. And that's when we tried it. And after the first semester of classes, and after serving as an intern at one of the law firms up in Topeka, I decided that is actually what I really would like to do with my life.
You found time for some teaching as well, haven't you?
I started teaching probably a year before I went to law school. It was something that I was intrigued by. I thought I might want to do with my life. I talked with Fran Jabera, who was one of my mentors, a person that I revered. And Fran said, let's do this. Let's give it a try. And he was involved in the university, obviously, out there, and set me up in a marketing class. And I just really enjoyed it. It was work, but I enjoyed it. I taught when I was at Washburn. I taught a management class for the two and a half years, that I was at Washburn. Then I came back, and Fran invited me to teach in the entrepreneurship department, and I've been teaching ever since. And I've loved it. Every semester, every class, I've very much enjoyed.
And then last year, a couple of years ago, you had one of my grandsons. And my
he was a good student.
Nolan was in your class.
Nolan was, I even remember where he sat in the classroom and he participated and he expressed himself very well and was an excellent student. And he's doing well, and I'm happy to hear that he is doing well.
You're listening to Issues 2025 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is retired Sedgwick County Judge Dave Dahl. You have two sons. When they were growing up, could you find any time to help with coaching?
I coached basketball and baseball with Tim McGuigan, God rest his soul,
I remember that name.
Yeah, he was a banker that got shot and killed a number of years ago, and such a dear friend. And we would have three practices a week during basketball season, three practices a week during baseball season. So we were in one another's company a lot, and Tim was like a brother to me. When I started to coach, I gave up all my volunteer work, and I volunteered a lot. I just think it's very important for us to do those types of things. I gave all of that up. I wasn't getting nearly as much sleep, but I thoroughly enjoyed the coaching, and a lot of our kids went on to play high school sports, which was one of our goals, and a lot of the kids have gone on to very satisfying and fulfilling careers.
Let's talk about a little bit more about sports this morning. Today's high school and college athlete, are they different from when we were young?
You know, when we were young, you and I would play the sport all the time. But then when it was football season, you'd play football. When it was basketball season, you'd play basketball. You don't see that quite as much anymore. People specialize quite a bit where they didn't so much in the past. People have access to trainers. I mean, if you want to be a baseball player and you're in middle school, you can be coached by an expert and pay for hitting and pitching and instructions like that. And they say that's one of the reasons, because the kids are playing baseball year-round, that a lot of even major league pitchers have arm problems is because they've worn them out when they were younger. So I think the game is different in that regard. But I go out and I watch some little league sports because we know some parents that have kids in it. And the kids still have the joy for the sport that you and I did when we were younger.
Here's something that we've seen, the emergence of female athletics. It's been amazing to me to watch this, because when we were in school, there wasn't anything for women and girls.
It was unfair. I have three sisters. my brother, Kurt, I'm the oldest of five, is a year younger. And then I have three sisters. The middle of the three sisters love sports. They all love sports. But the middle of the three really love sports. She'd go out, and she was the one that would shovel off the basketball court at our home, and she'd go out and shoot and shoot and shoot. But there was never an outlet for her, which was kind of heartbreaking. If she was born 20 years later, who knows what would have happened.
In those days, did you ever go out in the driveway with your mittens and your stocking cap on?
Yeah. In Minnesota, we sure did.
We did that here.
Yes. Shoveled off the walk, and we'd go out and shoot and play pickup games and just be freezing. But you did it for the joy of the sport.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was.
I want you to explain something for me, and that is name, image, and likeness, NIL. Big, big deal in sports now.
Yeah.
What is it?
It is, and what happened, there was a lawsuit in California. I think the plaintiff's name was Washington, but I can't remember. And he said, well, wait a minute. Why does the university get all this money when we're the ones that are giving our talent and people see us and recognize our names? And he won his lawsuit, and that opened up the floodgates to name, image, and likeness. And what that means is that an individual can be compensated many, many different ways for who he is and what his name is, and lending his name to the university through his sport or her sport. So you can get paid by the university, but you're supposed to do something for the payment that you get. You're supposed to make appearances, you're supposed to endorse things, and Wichita State does the same thing. The problem with all of that, and it's opened up, and there aren't any state laws in Kansas, but there are some pending laws in Kansas to define what it means. But if you have too restrictive of a name, image, and likeness, then the teams in Kansas are not going to be able to compete as well as the teams in other places. Like the payroll for Ohio State to win the national championship was $21 million. That was the name, image, and likeness for their players to win the national championship. And what had happened was the Big Five conferences said to the NCAA, we want more leeway on name, image, and likeness and transfer rules, and if you don't give it to us, what we're going to do is we're going to leave the NCAA and we're going to start our own association with just the top five conferences. And the NCAA said, well, we can't have that. So they've pretty much given in on all the demands of name, image, and likeness and transfer portals. But a lot of the old-time coaches, our age and even younger now, basketball, for example, is not the same because you have eight kids, nine kids transferring.
Yeah.
Every semester. So you don't have a chance to build a team. What you do is you hire a team.
And this brings up my next question, is because it's become so difficult for me to be a sports fan because the players change teams way too often. You know, when I was a kid, I knew what the Yankee starting lineup was. I knew the Whites. I knew several starting lineups, and it was the same guys every year. But the kids, you know, if they're here, they're gone. They're here, they're gone. That's, to me, sports is following teams and players.
They're more like AAU teams now, where you just get the best players and you throw them on the floor, and hopefully you can win with those players. John Calipari did that successfully at Kentucky, but now everybody else with name, image, and likeness is catching up to Kentucky. Calipari didn't have the same success. He left Kentucky. He's now at Arkansas and struggling at Arkansas with that type of thing. But what happened in Wichita, for example, which is probably indicative of the way it is in many, many different schools, the players would be here for 4 years. Heck, when the Shockers went to the Final Four, those were four-year players for the most part. And people would feel like they knew them, they'd come out, they'd feel an affiliation for them, and they wanted to support them. And that's not the case anymore. It's an entirely new group of people, and people can't identify with players. And I think that's, other than the top five conferences, that's what's caused attendance problems.
Growing up, I was followed, of course, Dave Stallworth, Kelly Pete, and
I knew that
every game Nate Bowman was going to foul out. You just knew it was going to happen. Let's talk about something else for a little bit here. In your legal career, you've been involved with families, good and bad. How do you see the future of the family in society? There's a deep one for you.
Yeah, and that's a tougher one. I was in family court for my first year. And, excuse me, that's the toughest assignment that I had was family court. But only a small percentage of people actually resort to the court system to resolve their problems with their family. A very small portion. But those people that do seek the help of the courts oftentimes are very challenged in the way they look at things and in the relationship with their spouse and things like that. I think the families are fine. I think one of the dilemmas you have is what the schools are dealing with now, and that is kids are isolated a little bit because they're on their phones all the time. And we used to have a rule in our house when the boys were growing up, no television. Because we didn't have cell phones. No television from Sunday night to Friday night. None whatsoever. And we would play games. We'd work on homework. We'd go see things. We'd do things. And to this day, my sons are pretty much the same way, and they do the same thing with their kids. But now it's with cell phones a little bit more.
Can our politics ever become civilized again? If it ever was.
You know, during our lifetime, I think it's going to be hard. As long as you and I are alive. I'm hoping that in our kids' lifetime, maybe. But with the advent of all the social media, there's just too much of an opportunity for misinformation. And then people jump in and they're very short-tempered with one another. And it's a sad thing. It's a sad commentary.
All right. We're getting close to the end here. Basically, what gets you out of bed in the morning? Other than the fact you like to hear our radio station.
Yeah,
radio
which show. Is great. I always listen to you, too, and it's fun. And Jad does a good job, too. I just have a high energy level, and I want to learn new things, do new things, try to accomplish a few things in my life. I like interacting with people. I like setting goals, seeing if I can accomplish those goals. And hopefully I still have some gas in the tank, and I think I do, that I will continue to be doing that for a number of years to come.
Think you'll have time to continue teaching and do the voluntary work and all that, you think?
Yeah, what I've done is, and I've been working on this for a year and a half, getting all this in play, I teach an evening course two nights a week. I now teach a daytime session of it also 2 days a week. On Mondays and Fridays, I help consult with and serve as an advisor for the Small Business Development Center. Brandy Willett is the head of that, and she does a great job and a great staff. So two full days a week, I do that. And then I'm helping with the Shockers, and I do a few things at our church. So my calendar's pretty full.
Sounds like in your semi-retirement, you're still going to be just fine.
I hope so.
Hey, thanks for spending some time with me. It's always fun. Our guest, retired Sedgwick County Judge David Dahl. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2025. Maybe I'll have you back again here in a few weeks. We'll talk some more.
Steve, thank you. Head
to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We'll be back next week, and thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.